Even back in Walt Whitman's time, it seems that there was a considerable amount of pressure to never contradict yourself. Society seemed to be saying then, a person with real integrity always stands up for what's right, sticks by their values no matter what. Across a lifetime, they are steadfast and true. They never waver. They never change their mind. But Whitman, along with other transcendentalists of his time, saw things a little bit differently. In perhaps the most famous line he ever wrote, Whitman asks, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes." Whitman was well aware of the contradictions and discrepancies that live within the self. More than that, he was comfortable with them and viewed the conflicts that erupt within as a sign of growth, self-actualization, and becoming. As he emphasizes in his poem, Song of the Self, all this is simply part of being alive as the past and present wilt and quickly fade. What you thought, did, or said back then means nothing now because the future is unfolding. And the future is the only thing that matters. Who you are in the future, what you say in the future, what you stand for in the future is the only thing that matters. So contradictions are purely inevitable, in Whitman's view, for any person who lives long enough and has the opportunity to think, speak, or write long enough is bound to contradict themselves as they learn, grow, integrate new facts, information, and experiences, and perpetually greet the future. So according to Whitman, we might as well get comfortable with contradictions and embrace the complexity of being a self across time. For we never really were, or even are. We are always becoming, welcoming the vast unknown, freshly greeting the imminent, no matter where we have been, what we said, or what we did. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. As radical as this concept may have been when Song of the Self was published in 1855, I wonder if it's perhaps even more profound in 2020. We live in a time when contradicting yourself or changing your mind is viewed with suspicion or even scorn. We live in a time of purity politics where everyone is expected to not only have the right view, whatever that is, but to have always had it, to never have thought or acted otherwise. We live in a time when the worst thing a politician can be called is a flip-flopper, someone who has changed their mind. And all of this, of course, is exacerbated by the simple fact that everything is recorded now. Everything. It's easier than ever before to quickly point out where someone has flip-flopped. The moment anybody says anything, does anything, publishes anything, a contradictory statement or idea from that person's past can usually be found online. If you were to look at my Facebook thread, something I said one day, I probably contradicted myself a few years ago. It happens. Because with enough time, we all contradict ourselves. But instead of welcoming contradictions or, you know, like being curious about them, if for some reason they're surprising or they seem off, we would maybe want to approach that with curiosity. But instead, more often I see our response being one of fear. We're afraid of them. We're afraid, and we even use them as weapons. Now, some contradictions matter a whole lot, so we need to pay attention. If a person has said or done something that intentionally hurts me or anyone else and claims to be different without taking responsibility for it, or if they're turning away from goodness in a new direction, away from the holy, I'm going to pay attention to that. I'm going to be mindful of that. But if someone has changed their mind on a policy issue or a social issue or in some conversation I'm having with them across maybe weeks, months, or years. And if they're moving forward with a fresh perspective, I try not to react with that quick impulse of fear or that quick feeling of contempt or judgment because they've changed their mind. I try to tune out the voices of society telling me that somehow this means the person is untrue or untrustworthy, and I work hard to appreciate their integrity, their inherent worth and dignity. I try to respect the complexities and multitudes within them, within us all. As President Obama, who indeed flip-flopped on many issues, including gay marriage, an issue very personal to me, said in a speech last fall at the Obama Foundation, "This idea of purity and that you're never compromised and you're always politically woke, you should get over that quickly. The world is messy. There are ambiguities. People who do really good stuff have flaws. People who you are fighting may love their kids and share certain things with you. Purity is an impossible standard. People are complicated. People are always becoming." So I got to thinking, what if instead of punishing other people or ourselves for changing our minds, what if we remember to see it as a sign of intellectual development and humility, of true open-mindedness and respect for the facts? What if we remembered our fifth sacred source, humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit, our fifth sacred source? Because science, after all, is based on respect for the facts and the scientific method. And we all know that the scientific method continuously results in complexity, things that contradict themselves as new information is acquired and new technology is developed. But with each new piece of information, scientists are able to integrate these things and make progress. Our use of reason perhaps is then the same. Over time, we go down different paths, we come to different conclusions, but if we are truly open-minded, we will be able to incorporate new thoughts and ideas without much trouble. Do I contradict myself? Very well then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. Tomorrow is, of course, Martin Luther King Day, a day of service when we honor a civil rights leader who we like to think of, says Pastor Whale Hudson Roberts, as a global benevolent hero, locked in the niceness of the reconciliatory "I Have a Dream" speech. What Hudson Roberts is pointing out here is King's contradictions, his complexity, is nuance. King may have started out as a hopeful reformer in the image that we like to remember him by, crystallized in the 1963 "I Have a Dream" speech, the nice, consistent figure, cooperative with whites and non-threatening to the institutions of power. But he evolved over time into a radical critic. For example, in the 1950s, at the beginning of King's public ministry, he worked with white moderates and believed that they were key to progress. He was confident that white Southern moderate ministers could be an influential force for moral good, helping their congregations eradicate racism from within. In a speech he made at Vanderbilt University in 1957 on the role of the church in facing racism, King said this: "There is in the white South more open-minded moderates than appear on the surface. God grant that the white moderates of the South will rise up courageously without fear and take over the leadership of the South in this tense period of transition. The nation is looking to the white ministers of the South for much of this leadership." But by the time he wrote the letter from a Birmingham jail in 1963, things had changed, and his views had changed too. In that letter, King wrote, "First, I must confess that over the past few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride towards freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice. So you can see King changed his mind on the role of white moderates in the civil rights movement, among other things, as he was increasingly radical in his later life. What he wrote in 1963 directly contradicts what he said in 1957, and by 1968, the last year of his life, he was actively working against white moderates and with poor people of all races to defeat what he had learned to call the triple threat of racism, militarism, and economic exploitation. These three things he came to see were the real heart of the problem in modern society. But we sometimes forget this and like to focus on exclusively the message from the beginning of his career, when he saw racism as the main problem and colorblind cooperation as the solution. I have a dream. Not the end of his career, when he saw the structures upholding racism, militarism, and poverty as the real problems, and a radical restructuring of society, of dismantling white supremacy, militarism, and capitalism as the solution. That's a much more difficult solution. Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. Even in his contradictions, which are inevitable when someone writes long enough and is in the public eye long enough, as Dr. King was, we contradict ourselves. But Dr. King was a man of integrity in a rapidly changing world. Think about it. Since the beginning of his work with the civil rights movement in the 50s, many things had changed. The Vietnam War had started. He had personally experienced much heartbreak as white people disappointed him. He had witnessed endless violence and seen too many people die. He had traveled the world. He had changed his worldview. He had evolved. He had changed his mind, but not his integrity. For true integrity involves being open and actively in conversation with life as it unfolds, paying attention and being really honest with things as they change, being open to new facts, new information, being willing to change your mind, being transformed, being and becoming. To be anything less like the poem we heard by Nathan Walker is to be hypnotized by the routine, by the familiar, by the monotonous, and to live a dull life. And that's not why we're here. Life is so much more rich, difficult, and beautiful than that. It is full of complexities and nuance and contradiction and endless opportunities to grow and become. How wonderful! How wonderful! And we, as co-creators of the world and all that is, every day get to wake up, pay attention, respond to our surroundings, take a fresh look at things, and continue to be true to ourselves, our morals, our values, as we greet the sunrise of each new day with all the information, feelings, and experiences we have in that moment. Beloveds, society would prefer that we think in black or white, either or, right or wrong. But let us remember the wisdom of the transcendentalists. It's never that simple. We are not who or what we were in the past or even in the present. We are becoming. People aren't locked into being one thing or thinking one way. As we live our lives and engage with creation, we co-create. We get some things right, we get some things wrong, we make beauty, we make a mess, we take responsibility, and we keep going. For we are complicated. We are contradictory creatures and we live in a complicated, contradictory world. We are large. We contain multitudes. So feel free to contradict yourself. Give it a try this week. Encourage others to do the same. And then do it again. For wisdom lies in honest wrestling with the gray areas, and the future is arriving. May this be so. Amen, and blessed be.